Welcome to the second hour of the WINY Talk Show. Call 928-1350 to be heard. Telephone lines are open, so call now.
Good morning and welcome to the WINY Talk Show, second hour. I'm John Mahan filling in for Addison, and very exciting to have on with us Republican incumbent for the 52nd District, Kurt Vail, and Democratic challenger, Greg Defoe, for the 52nd District State Representative debate. How are you this morning?
Great.
Yeah, ready to go.
Well, we're so happy to have you on and happy to be doing the 52nd District debate. And I know that we did the coin flip out there, as I believe, and Greg is going to be going first for opening statement. So, Greg, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you. I guess what I would like your listeners to know about me is my name is Greg Defoe. I'm a Democratic endorsed candidate for the 52nd District. I'm unaffiliated because my whole goal of this campaign is to give all of our voters a choice, different views, and that's what I'm all about. For qualifications, I'm an attorney. I was an attorney for 7 years in the state of Florida. I'm still licensed there. Not an attorney in Connecticut, but I did own and operate a law firm there for several years. Since moving there to Connecticut, I've done work with the police union, state police union. I do human resources work, and I'm an executive administrator at a veterinary center in Stafford. I joined this race because I was approached by people in the community. They felt that they weren't being represented in their state legislature, and I was a little hesitant to get in the race because I am unaffiliated, and I discussed some of the issues with our Democratic town committees, and I realized that we shared a lot of the same values, like protecting working families, fighting for labor rights, preserving our democracy, and so I decided to enter the race so that people would have that option. And I guess that's what I'm all about, is just giving the people a choice. I'm committed to transparency and accessibility in government, and my plan, if elected, is to engage the people continuously so that you are always knowledgeable and informed about what's happening in your state government, and that's what I'm all about. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Kurt, you have 2 minutes as well.
Good morning, John, and thank you for inviting us here. My name's Kurt Vail. I live in Stafford Springs. I graduated from Stafford High in 1986. And I'm currently the state representative in the 52nd District, which as of right now is all of Summers and all of Stafford. After the census and the redistricting, they added Union and the northwest section of Woodstock to the district. So now it would be the four towns. And it's been my honor to serve in that capacity for the last 8 years. Proud father of four children, Hannah, Noah, Sarah, and Vivian. And I currently serve on the Higher Education Committee and also Public Safety, which I've served on for the entirety of my time in the legislature. And for the last 4 years, it's been my honor to be the ranking member of Veterans Affairs, the Veterans Affairs Committee here, you know, for the state of Connecticut, and have had an opportunity to work, you know, actually with another local representative. Pat Boyd is the chairman, and we've always worked together to look out for the best interests of veterans. And so it would be – I've really enjoyed the experience for the last 8 years. I'm excited about meeting people in two new towns. So far, it's been great, and it's been the most rewarding experience of my life to serve, other than, you know, personal things with the family. But the most rewarding professional experience of my life for the last 8 years, and to serve Summers in Stafford. And I really look forward to, you know, the opportunity to serve Union and Woodstock moving forward.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, Kurt. Appreciate your opening statements. And we're going to move on to the first question, which for this one, we're going to start off with Kurt. So, Kurt, the 52nd District was recently expanded to include the town of Union and part of the town of Woodstock. Since this district expansion, have you learned anything new about these communities and their residents and what they want to see out of Hartford? 2 minutes.
Thank you. As you know, Union is adjacent to Stafford, and I'm very familiar with Union. In my generation, I'm 54 years old. People who grew up in Union used to go to Stafford High School. Now I think a lot of them go to the Academy. And so I'm very familiar with that, their leadership. It's a very small community. And, you know, I've done events with them in the past since serving. And so, yeah, I'm very familiar. Union's very unique. And they like their simplicity. And I support that 100%. And I've really got to, you know, get to know a little bit more about Woodstock, which is also very unique. Talked with the first selectman, and he's shown me around, met some local business owners, talked to people in the community. And again, I think we all have a lot of shared values about maybe smaller government and, you know, more rural. I already represent kind of a rural type district, so this is just an expansion of that. Summers is a huge agricultural community that's important to the people in Woodstock too. So continue to that. And the one thing about doing this job, it's about growth and understanding and listening. And so I look forward to continue to grow, to do better, to do this job better. And when the district expands, you know, I certainly have a lot more to learn and look forward to meeting the people as time goes on.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, Kurt. And Greg, you have 2 minutes as well.
Yeah, well, that's funny. That's a good question, actually, because one of the motivators behind this campaign is people came to me from Woodstock, from Union, from Stafford, and they said one of their grievances is that their rural communities weren't getting represented in their state legislature, and they felt that they were neglected. And I can't really speak to that, but I believe that they deserve equal representation. We have vitally important agricultural industry in those areas. And they just do deserve an equal amount of funding. They do deserve equal representation. And that's what I'm fighting for. And I think it's funny because John Wardasky, who was a state rep in the 50th District for like 25 years, he was instrumental in the creation of Woodstock Academy. And now that's one of our premier schools in the area and certainly in the district. And it's funny because that shows what these rural communities have to offer us and our states, and what we can model those things, those success stories, and bring them across the state and help them across our district. And that's, I think, what we can learn from those communities too. So they deserve equal representation. They deserve somebody who's going to fight for funding for their district, for their school systems, and that's what I'm all about.
All right, excellent. Thank you, Greg. And Kurt, you have an opportunity for a 1 minute rebuttal if you'd like.
Yeah, and again, I agree, and that's what I've been doing for the last 8 years. Again, working with farmers in Summers to help them get grants. Very successful in Stafford and Summer in getting steep grants, which is specifically for small towns. We just got two recently, one for each town and one for Stafford for the maximum $500,000 grant. So, you know, I agree with Greg wholeheartedly, but that's what I've been doing for the last 8 years. And so, you know, having a voice, I'm a member of the Rural and Agricultural Caucus, you know, and I'm out there doing that, fighting the tough fight, and trying to find ways to bring together people instead of it being rural versus urban. Maybe there's ways, and this is what I've been working at, finding common ground that maybe we can work on things that benefit both communities.
All right. All right. Thank you, Kurt. And Greg, you also have a minute rebuttal as well.
Oh, okay, great. You also, you know, what I would say to that is, you know, in Stafford we have the Leonard Street Bridge, which has been so in such disrepair that it's been closed for 3 or 4 years while the state and the town jockey for how to come up with the funding for that. And, you know, that's what the state rep ideally should be doing, and what took so long to get that funding. Where was the advocacy for that? And there's other critical infrastructure in our district. It needs funding now. Our infrastructure is in terrible disrepair, and you know, it's so critical to like our agricultural industry, our shipping. We need a state rep who's going to be on that from day one.
All right, thank you, Greg. Moving along to the next question, which this one we're going to lead off with Greg. Many consider this a financially challenging time for individuals and families, not only in Connecticut, but all across the country, as we face high inflation, high gas prices, an expensive housing market, and many other obstacles. How do you feel the current state legislature has been addressing the financial concerns of Connecticut residents? What would you do to address these challenges? 2 minutes.
Hi. Well, I think the state legislature, I would probably score them at a B. They've done pretty well. A lot of tax breaks recently, record tax breaks, actually, while balancing the budget and reducing our state liabilities for our pension plans. We could do a little bit more. You know, we have had a diesel tax increase recently, but some of these laws were passed either before inflation really took off or before we really knew what was going to happen with inflation. So those need to be rolled back. We could do more to give more tax money back to the people. I've said before, government, at times like this, it's the government that should run lean. Governments can incur deficits, family households cannot. So we could cut taxes, incur a deficit if necessary, cut spending if possible. In addition, we need to roll back regulatory red tape, make things cheaper for people and for businesses wherever possible.
All right. Thank you, Greg. And Kurt, same question.
Yeah, again, one thing, when the rising cost of gas went up, we addressed it at the Capitol, and they eliminated momentarily the fuel tax on gasoline only. And our Republican caucus pushed not only to eliminate the 25% gas tax, but to also eliminate the gross receipts tax. In Connecticut, we actually have two taxes on gasoline. And we also pushed to do that for diesel as well. The diesel issue is what's driving up the cost. It's exacerbating inflation here in Connecticut because the high cost of diesel then affects goods and services because that's how they're being delivered. And so it's a perpetual problem. And we have a spending problem here in Connecticut. So we have had a surplus of money because we got a lot of money from the federal government. We did impose in a bipartisan budget in 2017 spending and bond caps, which have helped significantly. So we have some restrictions, but I think we need to dig further into that. We've had a lot of proposals to do that. And I certainly support cutting taxes, but you have to balance a budget. So to cut taxes, you have to find areas to cut in spending. And it's something I think we do in Connecticut. And once somebody has a certain pool of money, they don't want to let it go. And I'm talking about the bureaucrats in Hartford within the different organizations. So to peel that back is not always easy because they feel, even if they don't have to spend the money, that if they don't, they're going to lose it. And we need to lose that mentality, maybe look for incentives to get our departments to spend less money. And so those are some of the things I think we could look at to control the rising costs.
All right. Thank you, Kurt. And opportunity for a one-minute rebuttal, Greg.
Yeah, Kurt is absolutely right about the double tax on gas. And one of those is a tax at the pump, and that's the one that we should be cutting so that it saves people money out of their pocket and not necessarily the trucking industry. In terms of spending, economics is a really complex issue, and governments can affect the economy based on how much they spend and how much they cut back. So you have to look at the entire economic picture to determine where to cut back on spending, where to increase funding, and what impact that's going to have. And that's an entire economic analysis there. So it's not enough to say we need to cut spending or balance the budget. Or you have to have a complete analysis.
All right. Thank you, Greg. And Kurt, you have the opportunity for a one-minute rebuttal as well.
Yeah, and again, with reducing spending, it's not that easy. The same way reducing taxes isn't just that simple. But reducing spending, I think each agency needs to have an audit and go through to find out, okay, what programs are working? What money's being well spent and what money's being wasted? And I think we don't have enough transparency in the government, and I think that's something that we need to look into. If there's a new administration at the state level after the election. I think that's something they will look into, and I look forward to if that's the case. But it's something we need to push for as a legislator, and we have in the past. But we have roadblocks in the way, and that's something we need to try to find a way to get those answers, to find out what's working and what's not working.
All right. Thank you, Kurt. So we're going to move on to the next question now. This one we're going to start off with Kurt. Last month, the state announced that a $500,000 grant was approved for the rehabilitation of the Stafford Middle School parking lot and surrounding area. What is your opinion on how the state has been supporting school-related projects throughout the state, including in the 52nd District? Are there any such projects or potential projects you would push for the state to support? 2 minutes.
Well, again, and I want to thank, you know, the state. And it, this town applies for the grant, and we have a great grant writer in the town of Stafford, and they also do an extremely good job in the town of Summers. They submit the grants. You know, state reps don't submit the grants. Our local communities submit the grants, and there's a multiple different grants. The ones you're talking about is a STEEP grant, which is for small towns. And I think it's for towns under 20,000 people, and you can get up to $500,000 every year. And so you have to have good grant writers within the town. And then it's our job as state legislators to know everything that's going on and then to support that and talk to, you know, the bonding and the finance committee to make sure that our towns are getting that money. And I have to say, you know, we've done pretty well in our local communities when it comes to getting STEEP grant money. And, you know, I look forward to continue to work that. That project is one that's very necessary. Also serve on the Board of Selectmen in Stafford. So I know, you know, how important that is. And there's other projects like Greg mentioned earlier, the bridge project, which is almost it's being done finally. And again, it is important. And again, we'll find out too, you know, what's most important to Woodstock and Union. But in the previous 8 years, I think Stafford and Summers has done pretty well when it comes to getting state grant money.
All right, Kurt. Thank you. Greg, 2 minutes as well.
Well, I would say that education is an interesting problem or issue in our district because, you know, one thing that we've had is we've had schools closed because they haven't had enough students to attend them to justify them staying open. So I think what we have to do there is make sure that we're getting all the funding that we can for the schools that we have, and then we have to look at some innovative ways that we can make the best use of our resources to tackle our future challenges. In Stafford, there's an old high school that's abandoned and dilapidated, and I've been talking about how we can update that school, refurb it. Can we lease it to a technical college to bring in some trade jobs and education in the area? But that's what we have to do. We have to think outside the box to maximize our resources and bring as much funding to the district as we can so that we can create a competitive, educated workforce right here in our district, because an educated citizenry is a key to a successful nation. It's key to a successful district. And I'm looking forward to tackling some new innovative ways that we can address our educational needs.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Kurt, you have the opportunity for a one-minute rebuttal.
I'm good.
All right. And Greg, if there's anything else you want to add, you can add it. All right. We will move on to the next question then. Also last month, the state announced that a more than $230,000 grant was approved for the reconstruction of Pleasant View Drive in Summers. What is your opinion on the state of Connecticut's infrastructure, including roads and bridges? If elected, is there anything you would like to focus on related to infrastructure and transportation? Start with Greg, 2 minutes.
Well, the infrastructure in our nation is terrible. I think we scored on average about a C-. For our bridges and our roads, our railways. We absolutely need to pump new funding. We've just got, with the Inflation Reduction Act and some of the COVID relief funds, we have, I believe, $150 million for infrastructure, and we have competitive companies right here in Connecticut that are trying to build for the future with things like new charging stations for electric vehicles. We need to heavily invest into infrastructure for the next generation, with things like high-speed rail, EV charging stations, because that is the future. That is the future of tech jobs, and we could plan for that now by investing wisely. I don't support tolls because it's just another tax on middle-income Americans trying to go to work every day. But we need to use the federal funds that we have and find other sources of income to heavily invest in our infrastructure. It is not in good shape.
All right. Thank you, Greg. And Kurt, you have 2 minutes as well.
Yeah, infrastructure is definitely an issue across the country right here in Connecticut and right here in this district. There's a lot of projects going on currently throughout the district. One of the problems here in Connecticut is that it costs us more to repair roads than it does on the national average. So you're getting less bang for your buck. Some of that's labor costs. Some of that's the cost of, you know, things cost more in the Northeast, unfortunately. And I don't think we always are as productive right now. We've had multiple projects in Stafford. There's one going on right now where they're paving the road in Stafford, and we're having serious traffic issues because now they're subcontracting these jobs out, and some of the subcontracts I don't think are doing a good enough job. This is something I was on the phone yesterday with the Department of Transportation. There was I experienced it myself even, but it's been ongoing, and several times I've called DOT. We're on Route 190 in Stafford while working on the road. It took 38 minutes to go 1 mile. I mean, that's ridiculous. People have to pick up their kids. People have to get to appointments, and it's outrageous. And because the state is subcontracting these things out, we're not getting the quality work that we should get, and I think that's something we need to look into as well. But it's definitely been an issue in Stafford right now. There's a lot of complaints. We have like construction fatigue, I think, the residents between the roundabout they built in the West Stafford area. Those things are necessary, but that project took a year and a half. So we need to find a ways to do things more efficiently and economically while still doing the best job we can.
Thank you, Kirk. Greg, you have the opportunity for a one-minute rebuttal.
What I would mention is Kurt mentioned that it costs more to do some infrastructure repair work here, and a lot of that is because our state, there's a lot of laws that force the government to pay high wages. That is a positive thing. All of the high-wage jobs that our government supports, they result in more money in the community that in turn supports businesses. So these high-wage jobs that may increase the cost to do infrastructure repair is actually a net positive. Every dollar the government spends results about $3 back to the government. The other thing I would say is that Kurt perfectly illustrated the dangers of privatizing certain industries and jobs that should lie strictly in the purview of a Democratic government. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. And Kurt, you also have the opportunity for 1 minute rebuttal.
Well, I agree that workers should be compensated for their worth 100%. But I don't think that worth should be determined by the governor, but by, you know, the free market. So certainly want to see people doing good work get paid every bit of what they deserve. But I don't think the government should make predetermined judgments on what that should be.
All right. Thank you, Kurt. We're going to move along to the next question now. And this one's going to lead off with Kurt. In recent years, Eversource Energy has been under intense pressure from the state to improve its response to power outages. However, WINY still regularly receives complaints from members of the community who believe there are far too many power outages far too often, especially in the town of Woodstock, whose geographically large and rural landscape frequently brings that town to the top of the utility company's outage list in the northeast corner. Do you believe Connecticut, and specifically the 52nd District, experiences more power outages than it should? If so, is there anything the state should further do? 2 minutes.
I haven't seen any data that would suggest that, but common sense would say, since we're a more rural area, that we have a lot more trees, so we have a lot more windstorms, rain, more likely to have power lines go down. Eversource has a little bit, when you have a virtual monopoly, it makes it very difficult, to do that. There's not a lot of competition. We've had a lot of issues with Eversource. We've tried to address them. It's been tough. They're not always very responsive. you know, we make phone calls to them, but, you know, we call Pura. They oversee all that stuff. But, yeah, again, there's something that, people will call me directly, and then I'll make a phone call, and they'll give me an answer. So it is more proactive. And so, obviously, when the, you know, Woodstock and Union are, again, very rural areas with a lot of trees, definitely more apt to have that. And I'll definitely, advocate for that as well moving forward.
All right. Thank you, Kurt. Greg, you have 2 minutes as well.
Thank you. I'm going to say something that I think I'm able to say as an unaffiliated candidate. I can say something that other candidates can't. I'm going to say I think Eversource is terrible, borderline exploitative. We give these companies infrastructure monopolies with the idea that they're going to operate for the public good, and they have investment is low risk, low return, high risk, high return. Infrastructure monopolies are low risk, and so they should have low returns and operate towards the public good. And they should have funds where they save and prepare for the future and to adapt their infrastructure for changing needs. And so when a storm comes, they shouldn't have wish to raise rates because they should have already planned for that. But we have a system where they don't, and they're not held to account by a government that is often complicit in what they do. And so I would really crack down. Oversight is the answer here. Force them to answer for what they do. Force them to be accountable. We want to talk about audits. Let's audit Eversource and find out where their money's going, because there should be a fund to prepare for things like storms and infrastructure repair. But there doesn't seem to be. Whenever something happens, they want to pass that cost on to the consumer immediately. So as a candidate, as a state rep, I would spearhead any kind of effort to make Eversource accountable and to bring down affordable rates for our citizens.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Kurt, you have the opportunity for a one-minute rebuttal.
Again, with the state, they have Pura, which is the overseeing body, which through them, they're the ones that deal with Eversource directly, although we do call Eversource directly. We had a situation with a farmer in Summers where they were going to turn off their power because they hadn't paid their bill, and I was able to call and let them know that they that wouldn't have been good, and they had cows and calves, and they were in a tough situation financially. So I was able to call Eversource directly and have them work with the farmer and keep that keep them open. And they were able to catch up on their bill later on down the road. So we can call Eversource directly, but the governing body over for the state is Pura. And, as a state rep, we have to put pressure on them to make sure that they give us the best possible outcomes for the citizens.
Thank you, Kurt. And Greg, you also have the opportunity for a one-minute rebuttal.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, there's only three governing bodies in Connecticut. There's state government. There's the governor and the state legislature and the court system. I believe Pura is a legislative body. If the state legislature wanted to hold them to account and compel them to take action or investigate, they could do that. They have that authority.
All right. Well, thank you, Greg. We appreciate the answers from both of you on that question. Let's move on to the next question. We're going to start with Greg, this one. This past spring, the announcement came for a new train station in the town of Enfield, which is just west of the 52nd District. Although this announcement was touted by the state as expanding train service to what they call Northeast Connecticut, many from this area argue that Enfield is not really part of the Northeast Connecticut region. What is your opinion on public transportation services in the Tolland and Windham County towns that the 52nd District serves? Are there any next steps that the state should take? 2 minutes.
Well, certainly, rail system, I think, could be an affordable alternative to driving. We should definitely focus on building rail systems, but we need to focus on future rail systems. In China, they have high-speed rail. You can travel across country in 4 hours. Here, if you want to go to Chicago, you've got to take a plane. We do not have an efficient rail system. So rail can help reduce some of the climate change effects we see from motor vehicles, but we need to invest more in it. And towns like Stafford and other population centers, Summers, we could invest more, build some new stations, but we should keep an eye on building things like high-speed rail to make it affordable and easy to travel to the coast. It can facilitate tourism, business travel, and, like I said, reduce some of the climate costs. Whether the station in Enfield is considered the Northeast Quarter, you know, it depends on how you perceive your area, I guess. It's certainly not in the 52nd District, but that doesn't mean we can't look at Summers, I'm sorry, Enfield, and see some of the positive things they're doing. I know some businesses that are developing future EV vehicles, and they're interested in doing some high-speed rail and some electric rail in the area, but we need to find the funds to do that and the political will.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Kurt, 2 minutes as well.
I think it's a good thing that they're doing that in Enfield. And well, I think if we're going to look at focus at public transportation here, it's probably going to have to be, you know, a bus or things like that. But what they do have in Stafford, there's a railway that goes through Stafford, which is primarily for cargo. And it runs from New London all the way up into Brattleboro, Vermont. But it goes through New London, the casino area, it goes through Norwich, it goes to Willimantic, it goes through Mansfield Depot, and it goes through Stafford. And in years ago, they had a Tiger grant they got from the federal government, $8 million to help bolster those rails so they could carry heavier cargo. And there was talk of starting a commuter rail there after that, those upgrades were finished. And so we have to work with the federal government. That was completed. So what the idea was is to create connectivity between New London, the casinos, Norwich, Willimantic, and then Mansfield Depot, where they could take a shuttle over to Yukon. And then Stafford would have been the last stop in Connecticut, and then it would go north and go up into Amherst. So there was connectivity between colleges, because you have the New London colleges down there. You have Norwich is a big city, and then you have Eastern and Willimantic, you have UConn. And so there was talk of that years ago. We need private industry to kind of take the bull by the horns and do a private-public partnership, but I'm certainly open to continue to have that conversation. And then there was going to be connectivity out of Palmer so that you could go from Palmer to Boston. And so there is talk of that. So I definitely think that's something we should continue to talk about moving forward.
Kurt, thank you for that answer. And Greg, your opportunity for a one-minute rebuttal.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't rebut anything. What Kurt said is true, and that's what I said in my statement as well. The interconnectivity to make business more efficient, travel more efficient, travel more ecologically friendly, that's a positive thing. We just have to be sure when we award funds and we do things like that we have the correct oversight. Because speaking about the DOT a few minutes ago, we heard about how dangerous it can be to privatize. It has to be a partnership between public and private entities with the correct oversight to work in the common good, what the public needs to meet those goals. But it could be a great thing. Railway could be a fantastic opportunity. Not only it could revitalize with jobs as well. We need to invest in that, and we need to invest for the future.
All right. Thank you, Greg. And Kurt, you have another minute as well, if you like.
No, I'm good.
All right. All set. We'll move on to the next question now. This one we're going to lead off with Kurt. Just yesterday, President Joe Biden announced that the COVID-19 public health emergency has been extended through January 11th of next year. Also yesterday, Governor Ned Lamont announced that based on the continuance of a declared public health emergency, more than $34 million in emergency SNAP benefits will go to more than 215,000 Connecticut households this Saturday. At this stage of the pandemic, what is your opinion on COVID-19 continuing to be considered a public health emergency in Connecticut and all of the legal, financial, and public health impacts of that decision? 2 minutes.
Well, obviously in 2020, when it came upon us, we had to take immediate action. There was a lot of unknowns at the time, and Connecticut declared a state of emergency, and the governor took over powers. We went out of session in March, and there was a lot of unknowns. So, you know, he needed to take control. We couldn't meet. And then we got together in September, and I have not supported that executive power since then. There's three branches of government. And as a representative, I don't believe in giving up my voice to do that. I think they extended too long. I think it's great that people are getting their SNAP benefits. And I do think that we keep declaring that so that we can get more federal money. And I guess some people could see positive in that. I don't, because it's still our taxpayer dollars. I don't think we should do that. I think we've learned a lot in this experience. I think it's time to get back to some normalcy. I think we have for the most part, but it's I don't believe in that it's any longer a health emergency.
All right, thank you, Kurt. And Greg, you have 2 minutes as well.
Yeah, I don't need 2 minutes. I actually concur with Kurt's analysis. I think that the pandemic is largely over. I think that we need to have a return to some level of normalcy. But if some government officials are using that to put, you know, food in hungry kids' mouths, I'm not going to complain. But I do think that the pandemic needs to be declared over and returned to normalcy at this point.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Kurt, you have another minute if you want to add anything.
No, thank you.
And Greg, all set? Okay. We'll move on to the next question. So this one we're going to lead off with Greg. The 52nd District contains many rural and farming-based areas. If elected, what would you do to encourage and promote agriculture in such a way to benefit the 52nd District? 2 minutes.
Well, I think that this comes back to the infrastructure question. We have our, you know, a dilapidated infrastructure. We need to make sure that we have the clean water, the bridges, the roads, the functioning highways that we need to move our crops once harvested. We need to make sure that our farmland is environmentally safe. And we need to look at some of the future farming methods. And I think some of those being pioneered right here at some of the educational institutes right here in the northeast corner, some future farming methods. And I just think that if we bring in more money to help support those, help diversify our crops, that's what we need to do.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Kurt, you have 2 minutes as well.
Well, again, I think the key to being a good representative in a rural district with a farming community is to listen to the farmers. And that's the most important thing. They're the experts. And so that's what I do. And again, I look forward to doing that in Woodstock. Woodstock and Summers are big agricultural communities. There's in Stafford, too, to some smaller extent, and Union. But those two towns are really big and have very active farmers who are part of the community. And I rely on them to keep me updated with what they need. A lot of farmers, specifically the Liptons and Summers, have been a huge resource. When the feed store closed down in Manchester, we were able to help get them a grant so they could do the feed store there, which was huge for farmers throughout the northeastern Connecticut and beyond. So they had access to feed and very proactive. And that's the key, is just to talk to your local farmers. They're the experts. Like I said, talking to that dairy farmer who is having some trouble, it's all about communication. And that's why I've sat on the Rural and Agricultural Caucus. You know, I personally am not a farmer. My dad was born on a farm, but I didn't. So it's my job as a representative to listen to those. I've learned more about it in the last 8 years. I'll continue to learn more about it and do my best to continue to advocate for them and to try to bring, cut red tape and bring more money into their pockets so they can do what they do as best as possible.
All right. Thank you, Kurt. Greg, you have another minute if you'd like.
Well, I would just say that, you know, Kurt's example of the grant that he helped get in is exactly the kind of representation that farmers need, and that's goes right to the heart of the funding issue that I spoke of, that we need to make sure they have all the resources that they can do the best job, grow the healthiest, best crops that they can, maximize the value of their land. And that's what I would like to do.
Thank you, Greg. And Kurt, you have another minute if you'd like.
No, thank you.
All right. We can move along to the next question now. Police departments and law enforcement agencies across the country are reporting that this is a challenging time for recruitment and keeping police forces staffed. Do you see this problem in Connecticut and the 52nd District? If so, what could the state do to address this problem? We're starting with Kurt. 2 minutes.
Well, of course, if it's an issue across the country and here, because, you know, the police have really, you know, obviously with what happened in Bristol, which was awful and just inexcusable, that, you know, these people put their lives on the line to protect us every day. It's a tough job. and now they're being scrutinized to levels that are just not fair. And, you know, there's bad apples in every profession, and I think police officers would be the first to tell you that, you know, they don't like that type of behavior. But the scrutiny that they've been put under, and the Police Accountability Act that was passed, you know, in special session without a public hearing, it was really adverse to police officers. And I'm a former correction officer. I worked in the Department of Corrections for 12 and a half years. So I have, you know, a similar law enforcement background. It's a very difficult job to do. And it's easy to look from the outside and say, hey, you know, it's very difficult to see negative things day in and day out and not. And so much that they do and so much that police do positive in the community. We can look outside this window right now and see people out there, you know, advocating for their community and police. And, you know, I think we need to I would be all for repealing, you know, that bill that was passed, because I don't think it was done properly anyways. I've been on the Public Safety Committee for 8 years. People's civil liberties are first and foremost to me, but so is keeping police safe. And I've been endorsed by the police officers of Connecticut. I've been endorsed by the state police in the past, and it's always something that's going to be a priority, is keeping them safe.
All right, thank you, Kurt. Greg, you have 2 minutes as well.
Yes, I would say there's definitely been a schism between the populace and the police. The events of the last few years have, I think, really given police the impression that they're not appreciated in society, and I think that's terrible, because they do an incredibly challenging job, and they do a socially vital job. And I think that one thing we have to do is repair that by creating laws that are fair to police, fair qualified immunity procedures, that if you're operating in good faith and you make an honest mistake, that you're not going to lose your kid's scholarship fund, you're not going to lose your house. We also have to take a look at, you know, how many of these police prosecutions are politically motivated, because either to placate an angry populace or for whatever reason. We have to treat officers, hold them to account, absolutely, but treat them with the respect and that their profession demands, because they do something that is critical to our society, and we have to make sure that they feel appreciated and that they know that society has their back.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Kurt, you have another minute if you'd like.
Well, I think that goes with, you know, the national rhetoric, and we have it some here in Connecticut too. And again, I mean, how many of us go to jobs, you know, the three of us sitting in here and beyond, where we have to worry about whether we're going to come home at the end of the day? And these people have to face that every day, going out to a routine call and never coming home, and their family have to deal with that. And these are things they deal with on a daily basis, and we take that for granted because we don't have to do it. And then to make it so difficult for them to do the job on top of it just doesn't make sense. And that's what happens. It's so divisive. Instead of trying to find ways to come together to improve community policing, you know, we're villainizing people at large, villainizing police officers as if they all have these behaviors, and that's just unfair, and it needs to change.
Thank you, Kurt. And Greg, you have another minute as well if you'd like.
Okay, yeah, no real rebuttal here, just an acknowledgement that society has to balance the needs of the police force with the need to hold them accountable when they do things that are wrong. Very seldom do I think that occurs. Very often, almost universally, police do an excellent job. So we just need to balance and have procedurally fair laws and policies in place so that we hold them into account when necessary and we protect them when they're in the right.
All right. Thank you, Greg. We'll move along to the next question, starting off with Greg with this one. Connecticut has seen both drought and more recently heavy rains and flooding this past summer. The governor and other state leaders have associated many of Connecticut's recent weather events with climate change, and there have been numerous recent examples of legislation at the state level intended to address climate change. What are your feelings on Connecticut's efforts to combat climate change? Are there any other ideas you have for how Connecticut should address climate-related issues? 2 minutes.
What I can say about climate change is I know it's kind of a hot-button topic, and there's some people who claim that mankind isn't really doing that much to affect it, or it's a natural process. It is a natural process, but mankind is undoubtedly contributing to that and exacerbating the problem. That is clear. The real issue is that it's a global problem. We share the same air, we share the same oceans, we share the same waterways. There's very little that Connecticut can do at a state level to make, you know, changes that's going to impact the world. And so what we really risk doing is if we implement, like, carbon taxes or things like that, carbon caps, that we make it difficult to do business here, we'll having a very small global footprint. What the state could do, I mean, we can create carbon subsidies and things like that, but there's not a lot that we can do to have an impact on the global stage. And so, you know, I'm not sure what we should do in that regard at the state level.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Kurt, you have 2 minutes as well.
I could agree with that, but the problem is, you know, there's people at the state level that are trying to put a carbon tax in and put all these things on our state that our neighboring states don't have, in the name of, saving the environment. And I think it's a little disingenuous. I do think, obviously, over time, the Earth changes, their global warming. I think the debate is how much do humans exacerbate that? Should we take care of our environment? 100%. But do we need to be Chicken Little and say, you know, the sky is falling? I'm not sure where that balance is. There's experts that say one thing, experts that say another. But I think a lot of these things that are done at the state level, I think a lot of it is political, to be honest with you. And I think they're trying to make a statement and then follow national politics. Most of these things should be done universally. Should we be good stewards of our environment in Connecticut? 100%. I support that. But not just, you know, willy-nilly and just, you know, go after everything and tax everybody. And you know, it needs to be done responsible with all the facts. Listen to both sides and do it responsibly. I do think it's very political. It's become a political hot button. And I think when bills are passed for political expedience, they're not very effective at all.
All right. Thank you, Kurt. Greg, you have the opportunity for another minute if you'd like.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, this has become a hot-button political topic, which is unfortunate because it affects all of us and it implicates so much. But the truth is, Shell Oil did a study in the 1970s, a comprehensive study, and they concluded back then that they were going to do irreparable harm to our environment if they continued with the energy policies that they did continue with. The Pentagon has concluded on their own, apolitically, that it is a great threat to humanity, and so has NASA. Well-respected departments of the government that are typically apolitical, they have determined that climate change is a vast threat, represents an existential threat to mankind. What we can do is enter into compacts with other states and try to create regional change, but even that is only going to have minimal effects on the global stage, but it's something we should look at. And I'm out of time. Thank you.
All right. And Kurt, you have another minute as well, if you'd like.
Well, again, if let's allow research and the free market to play out. If we don't have to have deadlines on when we'll be carbon free in the environment. And it's, let's not rush it. Let's let it happen naturally. Let's let it, let's not put deadlines on everything and make it happen. The free market will play out. If it's more economical, if it makes more sense, if it's better for the environment, we're going to grow with technology. That's how it's always been. That's how we grow over time. When the government forces that to happen, we don't get the best result. We allow the professionals to do it. I mean, people in government aren't experts. It's the people out in the society, the businesses doing these things, the innovation that we have with all these different energy sources like Elon Musk. Let people like that do their job, and it will. And the free market will help take care of itself.
Okay, and we're running short on time, so this last question is just going to be 1 minute for each and no opportunity for a rebuttal, but we're going to start with Kurt. Connecticut has seen a shocking spike in traffic-related fatalities in recent years. Do you have any ideas that might address this problem? And if so, what are they? 1 minute.
It's not something that has been brought to me personally. I think I don't think we need to lower the speed limit or anything like that. I think probably what the most thing is distracted driving is probably a big thing, because everyone's got a cell phone. Everyone's got to be everywhere now. Everyone needs information immediately. So that's the biggest thing. And we have laws in place to prevent that. I mean, we could put an emphasis on it to our local and state police to ask them to be more diligent in looking for distracted driving. But I think that's probably the biggest culprit, because of the cell phones, where no one can live without their cell phone for 2 seconds and they're constantly on it and need immediate gratification. I think that's the biggest problem.
All right, Greg, and you have 1 minute as well for that question.
Well, that's an interesting question, because I'm actually a volunteer firefighter in Stafford, and I've seen traffic fatalities both there and in my personal life, and they're terrible. And they impact something like 40,000 people every year. But a lot of those involve alcohol and drugs and intoxication. And so not everything has a legislative solution. And as terrible as they are, I join Kurt. Not everything has a legislative solution. What laws we do have to protect drivers and make driving safe, we already have on the books. This really needs to be a societal change where people understand that the consequences of their bad actions. They need to have respect for others on the road and realize that if they drive recklessly or under influence or unsafely, that they could potentially not only end their own life, but others' lives. And that's something our society just needs to understand, is that when we go out there in the world, we're operating with other people around us. We owe it to them just as much as they owe it to us to take care of them and look after them.
Thank you, Greg. Really appreciate that. And thank you so much for coming on today. We had with us, for those of you who might just be tuning in and missed the beginning, Republican incumbent Kurt Vail and Democratic challenger Greg Defoe, both running for the 52nd District State Representative seat. And as I had mentioned at the beginning, this is the first time WINY is doing a debate with this particular district because of the recent district expansion with the redistricting that they do every 10 years. And now it includes part of the town of Woodstock and the entire town of Union, making it more in our neck of the woods. So we hope that everyone out there listening got to learn about both candidates today. Thank you both for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you so much. WINY 1350 AM and 97.1 FM.
1350 AM WINY Putnam and 97.1 FM W246DN Putnam. Online at WINYradio.com.
Good morning. I'm Ed Donahue.